We are now looking at Iran really pretty much declaring war on Saudi Arabia. They have knocked out a good portion, over half of their oil production refineries. And it looks like the Houthis may have done it, although Mike Pompeo says this looks like a cruise missile. It's some sort of a missile strike that he believes came from northern Iraq, which also the Houthis, both of them, would be about Iran. But I just want to give you some perspective. You can listen to all of the talk about what people are calling Donald Trump or how they're doing more charges against Kavanaugh, which the New York Times had to retract part of that story this weekend. Or you can recognize that Russia, China, Hong Kong, England with Brexit, Europe, Cuba, Venezuela, Iran are all on the brink of disaster. They're all looking for game changing. And what does this Saudi Arabian oil strike mean to you? We're going to concentrate on that here in the next few minutes. If that is important to you, give me 1 minute and we begin.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
President Trump said the United States is, quote, locked and loaded and prepared to respond. But I don't think he wants to go to war. This president is not looking to go to war. The Iranians know this. The press knows this, but they're not saying that. Iran first attacked our oil tankers, then shot down one of our drones. Now they've attacked Saudi Arabia, shutting off 5% of the global oil supply. Things are going to get worse. Now, here's why. Iran wants sanctions relief. That's not a secret. We are crippling them economically because they are going for nuclear weapons. The minute they get nuclear weapons, we have to deal with these crazy people like we deal with Kim Jong-un. There are no good options. So the president is using every bit of our power that we have to cripple them and hopefully get them to fall into line or some sort of a regime change that does not come from us, but comes from the people. The people like the West. This is a different place in the Middle East. Now, my advice to the president would be this. Just keep your cool and weather the storm. Let the Saudis respond militarily to the militia that, you know, attacked the Saudi oil refinery. Do what Israel has been doing for decades. Have the Saudis target the militias, destroy the high-tech weaponry they have. Meanwhile, have the Treasury Department to continue to hit the Iranian regime where it hurts the most in their wallets. Continue maximum pressure because it is working. Iran is doing what terrorists do. They are trying to terrorize the world and scare us. They are trying to terrorize us and terrorize the world into getting their way. This attack will not be our last. But we cannot continue the business of responding with our military every time someone else should be taking care of it themselves. The Saudis have bought a lot of weapons from us. Maybe they should start using them themselves. We should not go to war. But I want you to understand fully how much the world is changing. And I hate to... Well, no, I don't. I want to give you the history of this social revolution, Saudi economics, the politics, and how we're even in bed with them in the first place. Because Saudi Arabia has played a very key role in keeping our dollar stable. And I don't know if that's going to last much longer because the world is changing. So let me give you a bit of history. At the end of World War II, Europe and Asia, everybody was in shambles except the United States. The USSR was pressing its military might all across Eastern Europe, and we needed financial stability. All of the Western allies tied their currency to the U.S. dollar, which at the time was backed in gold. then the United States and the rest of the West got greedy, and they said there's not enough gold to do all the things we want to do. And so in 1971, Nixon closed what's called the gold window at the Treasury, which meant if you had a dollar, you could go in and get a dollar's worth of gold. We were off the gold standard. But what people didn't know at the time, or most, is that Nixon had a deal with the Saudi royal family. Your money had to be backed by something. Otherwise, people, what good would it be? Why would you need the U.S. dollar anymore? In exchange, Saudi Arabia agreed that we would that they would only accept U.S. dollars for the purchase of its oil if the United States would provide ongoing military support for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So we would protect them, and they would make sure that everyone who said, hey, yeah, I'd like to buy a barrel of oil from you, had to do it in U.S. dollars. So that is why the U.S. has the, you know, reserve currency around the rest of the world. But that is beginning to change. However, to this day, 99% of international bank transfers close in U.S. dollars, and over 92% of all oil purchases occur in U.S. dollars. And it's been going this way for 50 years. We've had an alliance with Saudi Arabia. We ensure that their borders are safe. They ensure that the U.S. dollar is the primary currency used for financial transactions worldwide. But something happened here in America. Something big happened. About 15 years ago, the Roughnecks here in Texas, in Colorado, in Utah, North Dakota, Kansas, they figured out a new way, a new technique of changing the shale stone that we have into oil. Now, shale is oil that long ago dried into rock. How do you take that rock and turn it back into oil? Well, the process is called fracking. Fracking took hundreds of millions of cubic yards of earth and transformed it into energy. We now have 1.8 trillion barrels of oil here in the United States. That's enough energy production for more than 1,000 years of U.S. energy production, including any population growth. For 1,000 years, we can be energy independent. So what does that mean? Well, now that we have the largest oil reserves, oil production from the U.S. has put a permanent cap on global oil prices unless there's a significant disruption in global oil supplies. Prices, they say, now will have a hard time getting over $70 a barrel. If this would have happened in 2008, the price of oil could have gone up to $200 a barrel. What are we looking at? $65 a barrel? It's up 20%. Now, this is really significant for Saudi Arabia. I want you to consider the following. Because we have the capability, the U.S. is keeping oil prices suppressed into the $55, $60 barrel range. Okay? Saudi Arabia is only profitable producing oil at about $80 a barrel. So what does that mean? More than 80% of Saudi Arabia's GDP is based in oil and energy production. For comparison, in the U.S., less than 8% of our GDP relies on energy production. They're 80. So a few years ago, Saudi Arabia operated its first budget deficit since the 1950s. They've been swimming in cash. It's the only thing that has held that country together, because everybody is rich. But now they can't afford those things. In 2016, they issued government bonds. That means they took on government debt for the first time since the 50s to cover the budget shortfalls. The government is now losing about $12 billion a year and is, has to raise their debt ceiling to cover those deficits. In 2017, Saudi Arabia announced new plans under the crown prince. You remember him, Mohammed bin Salman? to take the Saudi Arabian oil industry, Aramco, and take it to an IPO. They were going to modernize everything, and they were going to let everybody invest. But by 2018, that IPO was falling apart. Oil prices had fallen below $50 a barrel, and the IPO, which they expected to raise nearly $2 trillion, was failing to receive any bids to raise even $50 billion. There was one journalist who was out there saying, this is crazy. His plan, the plan that the crown prince was pushing, was Vision 2030 for Saudi Arabia. The guy who was the most outspoken about what he was doing with this IPO and Aramco was Jamal Khashoggi, the guy who was murdered in Turkey. As soon as he was murdered, the IPO was shelved because now nobody wanted to buy anything from Aramco. So fast forward earlier to this year, Saudi Arabia and other OPEC nations announced to cut back oil production as a means to raise global prices. And by summer, they had succeeded in getting oil prices up to around $65 a barrel. But we came in and quickly came online and increased global supply to make up for the reduced OPEC production. We couldn't do that before. And by August, oil prices were back to $55 to $58 a barrel. Remember, Saudi oil has got to be about $80 a barrel, or they can't afford it. So what happened 3 weeks ago? And then what happened over the weekend? And what does all of this mean for us in the United States in the future? We'll continue in 1 minute. So Saudi Arabia needed this IPO. They needed foreign investment. So 3 weeks ago, they go back to the drawing board. They go to J.P. Morgan. That was the U.S. Bank that was leading. Barclays, Bank of Japan. All of these banks had gotten together and said, okay, we'll put together this IPO. Well, now 50% of oil production goes offline at an Aramco oil refinery. It is a massive blow to Saudi Arabia and may completely derail the IPO. That will have a devastating effect, driving oil prices up, at least in the short term. But remember, we can now come online with new production and make up for any shortfalls. Now, the fact that this is, at least reportedly, by Yemeni militia who are backed by Iran, means that there is a proxy war that's going on with Iran and Saudi Arabia. They've been fighting it for the last few years. And this has weakened one of America's most consistent and reliable parties in keeping the U.S. dollar as our reserve currency. So what do we do? Because we can just unplug from Saudi Arabia. But if we unplug from Saudi Arabia, the world may unplug from our dollar. It also shows us how desperate Iran is. It's Japan, 1940. You know, most people don't understand that Japan was responding to us. We sanctioned and isolated Iran. Japan. Now we've done the same thing to Iran, and their economy is crumbling. We have stopped them from selling their oil in the open market, which is something I believe we must do. But all of this bears watching. This may become the story of the last half of this year and might end up dominating global politics through 2020. 99% chance none of the Democratic candidates for presidency have any idea about how much history sits between us. How delicate it is between us and Saudi Arabia. Why we just can't pull the plug on Saudi Arabia. Every American should know this because it will affect us. The question is, where are you getting your news? The question is, what are they talking about today? Is anyone giving you a look at the globe? Because the globe is just starting to smoke everywhere. The slightest breeze could inflame all of us. Here's another breeze. Setting the stage for what could be one of the biggest industrial disputes in the U.S. in recent years, the UAW said yesterday that roughly 48,000 hourly workers at General Motors plants in the U.S. will go on strike. Did they go on strike? Can you look this up, Stu? They said yesterday they were going to go on strike today. This would be the first GM strike in 12 years. Are they on strike?
Yeah, I mean, they are definitely on strike. It's just it's unclear on how long this lasts, and but they say nearly 50,000 workers.
Okay, so here is the deal. GM said that they offered the union $7 billion in new investments, 5,400 jobs, most of them would be new, modest pay increases, improved benefits, and contract ratification bonus of $8,000. I know there's a lot of workers in Ohio that are listening to us, and I know you've worked really, really hard. And I don't want to get into your contract because I don't know all the details. I just do know this. America, buckle up. Buckle up. Because if they're on strike, you have people who are going to be making about $12,000 a year. Can you live for a month on $12,000 a year? And you have this many people who now are only being paid $12,000 a year by the union so they can sit at home. What does that do to the local economy? What does that do to the national economy? Again, somebody's got to put all of these puzzle pieces together and stop talking about fake stories from the New York Times. Stop talking about what the president tweeted yesterday. There's real news that is happening, and the world is changing right in front of us, but we refuse to look at it. More in a second. So I'm going to tell you a couple of stories. This last week, we've been studying as a family. We've been studying 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians walking down the street, one says. No, we've been talking about Paul, and how he talked about, you know, you've got to forgive others. You are going to have pain in your life, but, you know, it's all going to be good. And the one thing you really need to do is be a cheerful giver, be somebody who is looking to do something good. And so we've been working on noticing people around us and looking for opportunities to serve. I want to give you 2 amazing stories. First one, Christopher Graham, Antoine Garrett. These 2 students, they're at Martin Luther King College Prep, Memphis, Tennessee. They're 2 football team members, both upperclassmen. They saw this kid, Michael Todd, being teased for not having enough clothes to wear from school. People were laughing at him, bullying him, and he didn't wear his, you know, new shoes. He wore the same clothing every single day. He's just this poor white kid that, you know, kind of was in the hallway and was alone and not friends with anybody. So here come these 2 black football players. And these guys decide to do something about it. Now, one of them actually teased him one day in class. And he started feeling bad about it. And so he said to his friend, "Let's help him." So they went out and they got him new sneakers, new clothes, some of the stuff that, you know, they had, and they approach him in the hallway, and somebody has a cell phone and they record part of it.
This kid is stunned. He doesn't even know what to do. He doesn't smile. He doesn't react. I mean, can you imagine being stopped by two people just out of the blue? And the one kid said, hey, I made fun of you, and I feel really, really bad about it, and I just want to make it up to you. So I brought you some new clothes. They both brought in their backpacks, new sneakers, new clothes, et cetera, et cetera. The kid doesn't say very much because I think he's really freaked out.
You have to wonder if it was a setup if you're this kid. If one of the kids had already made fun of you for this, you'd have to think.
Yeah.
Like, what? Is it a dress? Is it, do they smell terribly? What's the scam here? But no scam.
No scam at all. He said, I want to give you the words that this kid in high school said. He told them later that he had never received a gift like this ever in his life, and that his mom had trouble buying him new clothes because I'm growing too fast. Quote, you guys are the best guys of my entire life. This has been the best day of my life. How awesome is that? So when you and I've been watching stories like this, there is something that is happening that's really, really good. And we can't fail to notice those things. Now, because I'm looking for things to help, and maybe you are too, I want to tell you this story. Glytis and Mylene, they're both from Cameroon. They moved to Texas from Cameroon less than a year ago. They came to America because they wanted a better life. They have two daughters, Gervina and Ivana, 5 and 7 years old. The husband, the dad, joined the U.S. Army and has been serving in our military since the beginning of the year. He's been away from his daughters for training for the last 5 months. Mom also works. A family friend was watching the girls. While dad was on military training, mom was at work. I don't want to get into the details. I don't even know what the details are. Just careless thinking. The two girls were left alone. Gervina, who is the youngest, she's 5 years old. She fell into the family's apartment pool. Ivana, the 7-year-old, then just jumped in. They were found unresponsive at the bottom with Ivana's arms wrapped around her little sister. Ivana passed away that day, the little sister the next morning. The 5-year-old just wanted to learn how to read like her older sister. 7-year-old, the last thing she told her father, who was away serving and getting military training, the last thing she said to her father over the phone was, Dad, when you come back, you have to teach me how to swim. Both parents are of strong Christian faith. They say they just want to wake up from this nightmare, but they accept that this is part of God's plan. They don't even have any anger towards the family friend that was supposed to be watching them. But they need to send their kids back to Cameroon for a funeral service. Funerals in Cameroon, I guess, are very expensive, and they have to send the bodies of the two girls home. The family is hoping to raise $20,000 to send the bodies back home and then provide a funeral service and both parents to fly back as well. We found this on the GoFundMe page. If you just search, if you go to GoFundMe.com, and search Drowned Sisters, it's the first one. I'll put this on my Facebook page and Twitter. But here's two people that did everything right. And they just need to get their kids back home. If you can help, go to the GoFundMe page. May I give you one more story? California School District has initiated an investigation after a Marine tackled two students engaged in a fistfight last week. Have you seen this video, Stu?
No.
Okay, so two kids at the Edison High School were fighting, and they were fist fighting. This 18-year-old, who was a former student there, saw what was happening, and nobody could get these two to stop, so he just went and he watched this video, and he goes and he just tackles them and brings them both down to the ground. Boom, takes them both down. Guess who the bad guy is? It's California.
Oh, gosh. The guy who tackled him.
Yeah, the guy who tackled them. The parents are now saying, I was upset. It was upsetting to see somebody just do that. I saw the whole thing, and I just thought it was unnecessary for someone like that shouldn't be allowed on campus. Excuse me. You were standing there? What were you doing to stop the fight? Or were you just standing there watching it?
Solid form tackle there, too, I would say.
It was.
Pretty good effort.
An adult should never put their hands on... They're trained to deal with situations in a different way in the military that shouldn't happen. Mm. He's now being investigated, and he's also receiving counseling. Maybe the school should investigate why nobody else was stopping it. Do you think? Maybe it's just me. Back in just a second. Welcome back to the Glenn Beck program. Coming up in just a second, the conservatives don't seem to have a plan for health care. Well, we're all paying the price for them not doing anything. We're going to delve into that and what can be done. And perhaps maybe there's a Republican out there that will have a spine and go, well, maybe I could propose something like that. Meanwhile, speaking of Republicans and proposals, the president is expected to come out with his gun legislation proposal, and the Republicans are waiting with bated breath. Oh, what should we do?
Well, I know, and it's at least all the reporting is they're just waiting for him to tell them what they should do.
I know.
Which is like, well, aren't you supposed to be a separate body of government that makes their own decisions?
You're supposed to be leading the legislation. He's supposed to be signing it.
Right. If you think there's some good gun control proposal that you support, then support it. Independent of whether the president supports it. And if you think it's a bad idea what the president supports, then oppose it. Unbelievable, though. They act as if they're just subservient to the president of the United States. That is not how this was designed.
No.
In fact, Congress is the superior branch.
Yes.
Congress. It is fascinating to see where this has gone. And, like, I mean, McConnell is on doing interviews about it.
Yeah, I've just been waiting to find out what the president's going to support, and then we'll bring it for a vote.
Like, well, why don't you do it? You guys can do these things. Whether he wants, he can decide. He's the president of the United States. His role is to decide whether he's going to sign your legislation or not. Is it constitutional? Is it not? Is it something that should be supported?
And they're all involved in coming up with something, and they're just giving it to the president. And the president was like, well, okay, well, we could do that.
You know what? Because they're cowards, and they all want cover.
Cowards.
What they're hoping for, because they know their voters don't want gun control legislation.
Mm-hmm.
So they're hoping that the president will come out and support something so they can push it onto him and blame him when the people revolt. Well, the president wanted this. You know, we brought it out here. We support the president. I mean, you don't support the president? They're trying to give this sort of like insurance policy for them having to make a decision about guns, and they can still claim that they quote unquote did something. It's embarrassing. If you believe these things are right, then support them. You're going to have to justify how they're constitutional, because I don't see how they are, but maybe you can get that through. I don't know. But come up, have the balls to say what you think is the right thing to do, and just put it in.
Well, we did these common sense solutions back in the 1990s when we banned automatic weapons and weapons of war.
Yeah.
It's not the 1990s anymore. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, and I don't think
conservatives will take kindly to it.
Well, they didn't like it then. Mm-mm. But I mean, on this note, by the way, there's actually a really halfway decent fact check from CNN about Can a president just confiscate assault weapons?
No.
Of course, the answer to that should be no. And they actually point out that even with legislation, there's no reason to believe this is a constitutional thing. You can't force people to give these things up and force a buyback in our Constitution.
You know, it's crazy because in desperate times, it's like, you know, let's go round up a group of people and put them in internment camps. That's not constitutional. That will never happen.
Right. I know. And they keep bringing up the assault weapons ban, the 94 to 04 assault weapons ban. They're like, look, we did it before. We could do it again. One thing they always leave out of that analysis is that that all happened before the Heller case. If they try to do that again, I think that would be ruled unconstitutional. I don't even think they could do the thing they did from the mid-90s to the early aughts.
To the early aughts.
I don't think that would be constitutional today based on the Heller precedent and others. So the idea that they can just come in here now and confiscate them by giving you a little bit of cash is, I mean, it's constitutionally laughable. That doesn't mean Beto would ever succeed. He's obviously not going to win this primary. I mean, all the disclaimers of his policy. But, I mean, everybody on the left seems to agree
all
with this
you
all of a
need,
sudden.
All you need is an incident.
Yep.
You know, and we're building them. Each time that goes by, they build them. When are we going to finally, until finally the camel's back breaks, and then we don't care about the Constitution anymore. Mm-hmm. We just want to stop this.
I know, and media narratives happen like this all the time. It's like, oh, there's trickle. This happened with, like, shark attacks. Mm-hmm. Remember back in the day, we were talking about this from 2001. Mm-hmm. There was, like, a couple of shark attacks, and then the media started covering them, and they built on each other. And when there was another one, it felt like a real problem. You know, here, we do have a problem with mass public shootings, obviously. However, overall gun violence is down. Overall violence is down. In context, it is a small, you know, niche of this overall issue that does need a lot of work. However, we're going in the right direction overall, and that's something that's more important than what the media focuses on every day.
Let me ask you this. This is the first time, too, if I can switch subjects. This is the first time that I think we have had a media that has been saying, oh, we're going to go to war. We're going to go to war with Iran. We're going to war. I don't think we're going to war. And I mean, I'm glad.
If you wanted to go to war, you don't fire John Bolton last week.
Right. Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it's the first time, I think, in my life where you can't make the case that the president is a warmonger or he's just doing this to distract. You know, that's what they said about even Clinton, who wasn't a warmonger. But, I mean, this is the first time you're like, I really don't think this president wants to do that at all.
I mean,
there's
multiple
no
decades
desire.
Of his history point to that fact.
Right, right. And yet, the press is continuing to paint him. And I think the press has just lost so much credibility with everyone. I'm not sure they control the dialogue anymore.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.